The middle of winter might seem like an oddball time to talk about fish. Sure, ice fishing is a possibility. I say that in the face of the monsoon that has descended upon us. And it probably sounds a little odd coming from me, whereas I have said on here many times that I don't fish near as much as I used to, though 2020 felt like a definite bounce-back year. However, I've seen a handful of things online recently with regards to fish, which I guess is why I'm thinking about fish. There is a sport fishing guide in our area, I won't divulge names, that routinely posts really exceptional photos of rainbow trout on his Facebook page. They are always a treat to see. They have everything. Color, spots, and size. Also, my brother-in-law, who lives in Kansas, shared a photo of a large salmon fillet he cooked up for my nephew's birthday. I felt compelled to point out to him, and did, that A, we get those for free, and B, I don't eat salmon. I have zero idea what he paid for it, but I'm betting it was a colossal sum. The third fish-related thing was a post by another U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service entity here in Alaska about a not-so-highly publicized fish species. Let's talk about that species today. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. The fish they highlighted was the Alaska blackfish. While this small species is certainly appreciated around here, no one from anywhere else is likely to be looking for them. Heck, most probably don't even know they exist. And it's no wonder that's the case. Not only are they small, more on that in just a bit, but they're pretty restricted in where they are found. Sometimes I'll talk about a species on this show that's found in a lot of places. Just the other day, I had a conversation with somebody about the numbers of moose found throughout Europe and Asia. Alaska certainly doesn't have a stranglehold on that species. Not so with the blackfish, which is only found in eastern Siberia and Alaska, and not even all of Alaska. If you look at a distribution map, it's western Alaska, some of the major rivers coming inland from there, the peninsula, and parts of the Kenai Peninsula and Mat-Su Valley. In the case of those latter two locations, they are an introduced species, though no one is really totally sure how they got there, nor how many are really there. They are known to inhabit weed-choked ponds, lakes, and sloughs on Togiak Refuge. They're a funny-looking fish, and again not very large. They have an elongated body shape with a flattened round snout. They have a mottled look to them, though the color can vary from a darkish green to brownish black, with irregular bands on the sides. When I say small, they rarely exceed 8 inches in length, although they can occasionally reach a foot. They have large pectoral fins and a large tail. The pectoral fins almost look like the blades of a canoe paddle. The pelvic fins are tiny. The dorsal and anal fins are fairly large and very similar in size and shape. In a very non-specific way, they kind of remind me a little bit of flathead catfish, like I used to fish for back in Kansas along the Smoky Hill River. Mature males can be told from the females by a reddish edge along the dorsal and anal fins as well as the tail. But the uniqueness of this diminutive species does not stop at its looks. The blackfish is also different in that it has a modified esophagus that allows it to exist off atmospheric oxygen. In other words, it can breathe air just like you and me. This capability allows these fish to live in small, stagnant tundra ponds that are almost completely devoid of oxygen in the summers, and also to survive in the moist tundra mosses during extended dry periods while waiting for the rain to fill the pools again. They only need to stay moist to stay alive. Only one other fish species in the world, the tropical swamp eel, is known to have a similar such adaptation. Since blackfish can survive off atmospheric oxygen, they're a very hardy fish and hard to get rid of. One story I read said they tried to poison them in an Anchorage lake a number of years ago, but efforts failed. More on why they'd want to do that in a moment. Some people have reported that blackfish can be completely frozen and survive, though scientists haven't been able to produce those results in a lab. They can withstand partial freezing of some body parts, to include the head, and they can also endure water devoid of oxygen at 32 degrees Fahrenheit for up to 24 hours. The life history of Alaska blackfish is not well studied, but it is thought that they spawn in spring and summer throughout their range. Adults spawn in quiet streams and ponds, scattering fertilized eggs on the vegetation. Females release the eggs in intervals, with a total of 40 to 300 eggs being laid throughout the entire spawning period. The eggs stick to the heavy vegetation and hatch in about 9 days. The young are tiny at hatching and live off their yolk sacs for about 10 days. Growth is believed to be rapid during the first year, depending on food availability and water temperature. Little is known about any sort of migratory behavior, but it is assumed that short movements do occur between spawning and feeding areas. Blackfish feed voraciously on aquatic insects, tiny crustaceans, and small fish. Larger blackfish are known to be opportunistically cannibalistic, feeding on smaller blackfish when they can. The volume of the smaller stuff on their menu is why they are seen as a problem in some places and why there were efforts to eradicate them from that Anchorage lake. It's thought that perhaps they eat so much that they leave less food for other fish species. Some folks think that maybe introduced blackfish around Wasilla and Anchorage have led to diminished populations of both sticklebacks and rainbow trout in some places, both of which are native species, due to eating up all the grub those two species rely on. Combined with their ability to put up with harsh conditions, they can outcompete other fish species they share waters with. At the other end of the spectrum, they are and can be prey for pretty much anything larger, to include other fish, all manner of birds, mammals such as mink and otters, and man. On the subject of man, blackfish have a long history of human use. Alaska's natives have used blackfish extensively as a food source, and they're still used in many areas, for both human consumption and for dogs as well. While their range might not be large on a global scale, they're a very abundant fish in many places, and they are also fairly easy to catch in large quantities. Blackfish can be targeted during any season, but are particularly susceptible to being caught during winter months. As oxygen becomes depleted below the ice, they will seek out open water. Well, think a hole made by a beaver or muskrat, to make use of atmospheric oxygen. The fish tend to concentrate near those holes, and often in very large numbers, making them easy to trap. Historically, funnel-shaped traps of strips of wood were used to collect them. Similar traps are used today, though they're made of galvanized mesh. Despite areas of heavy use, many people who regularly harvest blackfish claim they are always extremely abundant each year, with no real indications of such pressure causing a decline in populations. I have seen blackfish. I've never eaten blackfish. I've read several ways people prepare them. Some folks like to dry them on poles to be cooked later. Some people freeze them and eat them raw. They can also be smoked. I've read that boiling them while they are fresh and eating them with seal oil is also popular, and they are considered both nutritious and tasty. When used as dog food, they're prized for their high oil content. Alaska has a lot of really unique and fascinating animals. Well, maybe that's the nature of a place that's so remote and so large. The blackfish sure has a spot on that list. It's small, it's not widespread, globally speaking. It's odd-looking, and it has a really cool adaptation that sets it apart. In closing today, I'd like to switch gears to talk about something that's had a bit of a curveball thrown at it with COVID. Right now is normally the busiest part of my schedule, with the Alaska Migratory Bird Calendar Contest and getting into classes and trying to drum up support. Yesterday, I sent out materials to all of the area schools I normally have contact with. It is my hope that the principals of those schools will share what I sent with their respective staffs and that staff members will find what I sent helpful. I was given a stop sign from our regional office on actually going into classes to talk about the contest, so I'm hoping that interested teachers and individuals will take the initiative if this is something they want to pursue. Talk with your child's teacher to see if they received what was sent out or if they plan to participate. If you're uncertain but would like your child to participate, hit me up. Email's the best way to reach me. My email address is, all lowercase, Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, underscore, Fuller, F-U-L-L-E-R, at fws.gov. I repeat, Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, underscore, Fuller, F-U-L-L-E-R, at fws.gov. You can also try calling. My direct line is 842-8419. My voice message is a little out of whack, so don't bother leaving a message. I am normally in my office from 7:30 to 4 each day. Related to that, the calendar, that is, the new calendars for 2021 have not arrived from the printer yet. As soon as I have those, I'll get those to the schools ASAP, and I'll try to remember to notify folks on here. Likewise, I'm still waiting to get out prizes to last year's winners, waiting for the last prizes to arrive. Everything wound up taking a hit this year. It'll get done, just a little later than usual. Thank you all very much for your patience. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.